everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I got another exciting interview today. It's a returning guest. His name is Jonathan Kaplan of Numeris Capital. Numeris is a crypto asset hedge fund. He's a fellow Austinite I met here in Texas. He came on our show for the very first time last year at a very timely time, I would say. And he said something along the lines of, you know, investing in Bitcoin is like winning the lottery in slow motion. And, you know, he really struck a nerve with everyone and our audience. And he's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to the markets, especially as it pertains to cryptocurrencies. And, you know, especially in light of what the greatest bull market history has ever seen, you know, the 2017 bull market in cryptocurrency. What an exciting time to be alive. Jonathan, without any further ado, thanks for coming on the show with me today.
Thanks for having me, Ken. It's always a pleasure to be on here with you and with Crush the Street.
How you doing? How's everything going?
You know, it's been a really interesting year, because for the folks who have been in Bitcoin or have been in crypto for the last couple of years, it has been exactly like you described. For the folks who were finding out about all this in the hype of November and December last year, it probably feels somewhat like the opposite, like, you know, not winning the lottery in slow motion, but, you know, watching a dream that you get all excited about maybe evaporate over the last 10 or 12 months. But the good news is, on the fundamental side, things could not be better. We're working on scaling. We're working on all sorts of different infrastructure, benefits, custody, regulation. The entire space is growing at just exponential speeds. And it's unfortunate that so many people are focused so much on the price action, which at the end of the day, we're here to make money. That's what we want to do. If you look at a longer time horizon, if you look at the weekly or the monthly charts, I think there's a lot more reason to be optimistic. And it's a bit frustrating that the folks that might have gotten all excited at the end of the bull market, many of them don't seem to have stuck around long enough to have really learned how these market cycles work and what's going on fundamentally, what we could expect over the next couple of years. But for the folks who did stick around, for those who are watching right now or are starting to get interested for the first time, there could not be a better time to get involved if you're not already interested. So I think that we're looking at either having already ended the 2018 bear market. I'm probably in the minority there, because a lot of people still think we have further downside. I'm cautiously optimistic that the lows are in, and that for the last month or two, we've just been consolidating sideways. And, you know, the volume, the price action would support that. It looks like the volatility is dying down, the volume's drying up, things are getting pretty darn quiet. And I think the longer this continues, well, the longer we can go in a nice stable base, I think the better of a foundation we have for the next rally. And having been running the fund for a year and talking with fund managers and institutions, I can absolutely tell you that Wall Street, Silicon Valley, the big guys are getting involved, and it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. So I'm really excited. It's been a tough year, but I'm very excited for the future. And I think that, you know, the next two or three years are going to make 2017 look like child's play.
So, you know what? Well, you said it was a tough year, but I have to point out, because I'm very familiar, I've been invested in Numeris, and you guys have protected your investors a lot better than just being a part of the market. So people who were invested with you guys wanting exposure to cryptocurrency or crypto assets fared a lot better. I know we can't really get into returns. I've dealt with money managers in the past, and it's kind of tricky to say, you know, this has been the return of the portfolio, whatever. But you guys were cautiously optimistic, even in that top bubble phase period, and people that were invested with you have outperform the general market by a lot. So I'd love to get your philosophy on that. You know, how did you prepare? How did you go into that November, December period? And, you know, what's the philosophy going forward to continue to outperform the overall market?
It's a great question. I appreciate you bringing it up. it's like you said, it's been kind of a crazy ride, because a large number of our clients did find us, you know, through podcasts like yours, or, you know, through the general fall hype of October, November, December last year, as we were just getting the fund started. And, you know, they were definitely expecting a continuation of that 2017 bull. They had heard stories from friends or family about, you know, the ridiculous gains that they had seen. And while we weren't able to deliver those gains in 2018, you're right, we did protect the vast majority of their capital. We basically took some very minor positions in January, and then when we realized that the market had shifted and that the bull was over and that it looked like we were in for a lot more pain, we got stopped out, and we've been sitting in 95% cash for most of the year. By the time we ended up getting a lot of our institutional exchange accounts, we were already down 60-70%, or the market was down 60-70%, and it wasn't a great time to go short. Ironically, we actually would have done pretty well if we had, but I don't like shorting crypto. I don't like shorting things that are down 60-70%. So we figured, look, we're going to be patient. The market moves in cycles. And I think that it's a lot easier for folks to zoom out and slow down when they're trying to make investment decisions like this. And so that's exactly what we've done. I encourage folks that are looking into Bitcoin or looking into the crypto markets, if you are a chartist, or you're, you know, you understand how to read price and volume activity, to zoom out, and especially to use a log chart. I think a lot of people use linear charts trying to measure exactly when to invest or how volatile the market has been. But I like to remind people that, you know, a $600 Bitcoin price move in 2018 is certainly a lot different than a $600 price movement in 2015. And so you really want to use a log chart, because you can measure percentage changes a lot more easily with a log than with a linear chart. And if you use a log chart on Bitcoin and you look at, say, the last 5 years, things actually look pretty good. It's obviously been a crazy bull market. And if you look at the last 5 years, one could even make an argument that what a lot of people are calling the 2018 bear market in the long term could just be, you know, a steeper correction within an overall, you know, if you look at the all-time price chart of Bitcoin, it's basically, you know, up and to the right pretty dramatically. And I think we're still in that curve. My overall idea basically is that Bitcoin in particular is a superior technology. It's the best money that humans have either found or invented. And as that knowledge makes its way through the population over time, chunks of the population get caught up in these speculative cycles where you have a ton of people that rush in all at once. And then, you know, folks take profit, stop losses are hit, panic selling ensues, and what goes up comes right back down. But every time we do that, you end up with a group of people that are not, that they're willing to hold no matter what the price action is. They buy Bitcoin and then they just hold on to it, and they're not willing to sell, certainly within the near future, and maybe, you know, for a long time. And so every time Bitcoin, air quote, crashes 80-90%, whatever it is, if it doesn't die, and so far it hasn't, it's just every time it develops a stable base. And as long as that base is stable enough for a long enough period of time, eventually a new group of people come in, either the folks who saw the last cycle and never invested, or folks who are just finding out about it now, and they go, oh, wow, you know, Bitcoin's been relatively stable for a couple of months, and it looks like all the volatility's died down. Maybe now's a good time to get in, and then the whole cycle repeats itself. So it's definitely more difficult to figure out when to sell, and I think that's true of, you know, investing in any asset class, but in terms of trying to figure out when to buy, that's certainly a lot easier, because you can take a look at the chart and the price activity, and you can see when the momentum is dying down, when the volatility is dying down, when you have a safer entry. And so what we're doing right now is, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic that we've seen the lows, and I'm waiting for confirmation that we have exited sort of this no man's land sideways consolidation. And once we see that trend change from sideways, low volume, low volatility to big volume, obvious upward price action, well, then we'll start looking for good stable bases chart-wise, and that's when we'll place our big bets. And I liken it to playing poker. You know, you need to play the hand that you're dealt as you're dealt it, with an eye on, you know, how you're going to manage your chip size. And sometimes it's better to fold every, you know, even if you get a decent hand, to just fold and fold and fold and protect your chips until you get pocket aces. And when you get pocket aces and you're looking around the table and everything else is lined up your way, well, then it's time to go big. And that's basically what we've done this year. We made a few trades. You know, we kept most of our capital waiting for pocket aces, and I think we're very, very close to being dealt those cards. So somewhere within the next 3 to 6 months, I have a feeling we'll be deploying the bulk of our capital, and ideally we see something very similar to what happened over the last 3 years, but instead of going from, you know, 10 billion to 80 billion, I'm looking at going from 100 billion to 10 trillion. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities.
So, Jonathan, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, do you suspect another bull market in the way we've seen things happen in crypto, say in 2013, and then once again to a very large degree in 2017? Or do you suspect the cycle to be brand new once again, just the same way 2017 was different than the 2013 bull market?
That's an interesting question. It's tough to make comparisons because in 2013, you know, Bitcoin was really the only asset in that class. There had been some of the altcoins like Litecoin and Peercoin and some other assets that had come along, but they were very illiquid. They made up a very small percentage of the market, so Bitcoin was really the only player. And then, of course, the last few years, you had networks like Ethereum and all these other alts that, you know, have billion-dollar valuations. And so now suddenly you've got a market to look at. And, of course, we saw assets like Ethereum outperform Bitcoin for certain parts of last year. And I think that a lot of what Ethereum brought to the table, and Bitcoin benefited from this too, but you would have to buy Bitcoin or Ethereum in order to invest in a lot of these other assets. So because of the ability for a crypto asset market to develop based either on the smart contract platforms or on new blockchains that have been forked from Bitcoin, things of that nature, I think that you're going to see a similar pattern in terms of just price action. I think that the market is like a pendulum where, you know, it swings back and forth from fear to greed, from undervalued to overvalued. It's very difficult for the market to ever decide, you know, okay, this is exactly where this thing's supposed to be valued and we're just going to stay, you know, right there. It's always this discovery of what something should be valued at and, you know, watching human nature take over with the speculation and the greed to reach for more versus the fear of losing what you have. So I don't know exactly what this next cycle will look like. My guess is that what we do know is that I hate to call it a bubble, I'd call it a cycle, but every cycle we have has been really driven by a different group of people. I think in early 2013, it was sort of the, you know, the crypto anarchists, the libertarians, the anti-statists that were very hardcore, ideologically driven folks. And then over the last few years, it's been folks like you or myself, the retail investors who were simply curious and we were paying attention to the things that, you know, the mainstream media and that big money thought were silly, you know, computer programmer hobbyist networks. Well, now I think that this next cycle will absolutely be driven by big capital, by financial capital. And you see that historically. There's a great book called Technological Revolutions and Financial Capital, written by a woman named Carlotta Perez in 2002, actually, in the aftermath of the dot-com bubble popping. And she writes that roughly every 50 years since the initial industrial revolution in the late 18th century, we've had some sort of technological revolution roughly every 50 years. And that it started with heavy machinery, things like Eli Whitney's cotton gin. And then after that, we had the steam engine and railroads. 50 years or so after that, we had the age of electricity and steel. Automobiles and manufacturing came later. And then in 1971, with the microprocessor, we had the age of information. And I think that crypto is sort of an extension of that latest technological revolution. And what's most fascinating about her thesis is that she looks specifically at the action of what she calls financial capital. Basically, the financiers, the banking industry, the investors react to the creation of a new technology in the same way every time. And 50 years is about enough time for the folks that went through the previous cycle to have forgotten those lessons or to have not lived through them. And so then you have human nature, which is unchanging, simply repeating itself over and over. And I think what's been most interesting is that big capital, big finance has really not gotten involved in crypto yet. And at this point, it's almost a cliche to say that, but I think it's true. And there's evidence all over the place, whether, you know, the New York Stock Exchange working to create this new backed cryptocurrency exchange, all the different institutions that are providing custody, all the new regulatory announcements that have come out. There's an obvious desire by big investors to get involved in this. So what we're looking at is if they're, and surely, you know, retail investment will come back. But I think that the main question now is how is financial capital going to enter the crypto markets and what's that timeline going to look like? So I'm doing a lot of research into that area. I'm looking at things like security tokens, looking at the various regulatory bodies in the US and Europe and Asia, trying to figure out, you know, how those trillions of dollars in negative yielding bonds or offshore, you know, Caymans type of accounts, all this money, gold is a good example, may or may not go along with the bear market we've seen in precious metals as people are realizing that Bitcoin is sort of this digital gold that improves on all the aspects that gold has itself. But essentially, I'm looking at, well, we're looking at big money coming in the next couple of years. How is that going to happen and where?
So maybe we'll get into some of the other aspects of the fundamental build out. But this is a big one. And I'm particularly interested in this. We have this huge financial trend right now with cannabis. And, you know, I want to talk about the cannabis blockchain marriage potentially. You know, first of all, we've gone into this euphoric phase with everything happening in cannabis at the moment. You have Canada legalizing recreational weed federally, Constellation Brands, producer of Corona, an iconic brand, establishing a stake in Canopy Growth, a cannabis company. Huge news. And then the market was rocked once again with Coca-Cola talking about a CBD drink possibly coming into the market. But I mean, this is huge, and it's very interesting to me because cannabis is an industry that's in its infancy and it needs infrastructure. People want assurance of quality. People want to know where the product is being sourced. And, you know, in the case of the US, it's nearly impossible to bank the cannabis industry. So naturally, I think crypto is a perfect fit for this sector. But I'm curious as to your thoughts on this, and have you seen anything interesting as it pertains to cannabis and blockchain?
It's a great question. There's certainly very two hot areas that I think a lot of people have underestimated in the last few years and that they also really don't know much about. You know, I'm here in Austin. It's not legal in Texas yet, so I don't have that much hands-on experience with the cannabis industry. There's a couple what I think are really interesting aspects of sort of the crypto space that is, I think, making its way into the cannabis industry. And we've seen this for a couple of years just in the difficulty that a lot of these cannabis companies have in gaining access to banking operations. You know, they're denied accounts, they're going frequently denied loans, or, you know, investment opportunities aren't coming as easily to them. And, you know, Bitcoin was a way. Well, you know, that was one of the things that really put Bitcoin on the map, was the creation of the Silk Road, which for a long time sort of tainted the reputation of Bitcoin as only being used for, you know, buying drugs. But it really missed the big picture, which is, you know, Bitcoin is this uncensorable money. If I have the private keys to my Bitcoin, that's a bearer asset and I own that Bitcoin. And if I decide to send it to somebody else, well, there's nothing that anyone can do to stop me. And so I think that, you know, first of all, crypto can provide the financial infrastructure that it's lacking with the legacy financial system. Crypto can provide an alternative there. There's also some other nifty things that are coming out that really aren't quite complete. There's still works in progress, but there's two aspects that I find really interesting. One is the intersection of the Internet of Things with crypto networks focused on supply chain. Off the top of my head, I know Ambrosis and Walton Coin and some others are working on that, where if you're looking at pharmaceuticals or food products, you know, things like vanilla pods or cocoa beans or coffee, you need to know, well, you know, where was that product sourced from, and, you know, how long was it in transit? And with today's technology, you can implement sensors pretty cheaply just about anywhere into anything. You know, and imagine that you decide to pick up a prescription at the store and you can scan a QR code on that pill bottle with your phone and be told, well, you know, this batch of pills was produced in this factory, in this city, in this town, on this date, and it was transmitted in a truck, you know, that drove this route over this last week, and the temperature inside that truck never fluctuated, you know, more than 5 degrees from 68 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever it might be. We have a way now where we can combine this Internet of Things data collection with the ability for a blockchain to allow large groups of people to come to consensus on what specific type of data was at a particular time and place. So now we can work on tracking various variables across the blockchain. And certainly I would think that would apply to cannabis, you know, where was it sourced and, you know, what kind of fertilizer was used and, you know, if there were any pesticides that were applied and how old it is, all those sorts of things were again, it's very rough, but we're starting to experiment with that. And then I think there's a third area that could also be of interest, similarly related to what I spoke about first with crypto serving as sort of an alternative financial network to a lot of the companies or startups in the cannabis industry. There's been a lot of talk of security tokens, and this was an aspect of you know, financial capital looking to enter the crypto markets, and people were saying, well, right now stock markets are, compared to how quickly things can move in crypto, they're relatively slow and inefficient, and they're bogged down by middlemen, and you know, they take these fees at every turn, and you know, what if you could put regular securities on the blockchain? And when people, you know, talk about putting shares of Apple or Microsoft on a blockchain, I think, you know, that's not that interesting. Maybe you make things slightly faster, slightly cheaper, but you're not looking at, you know, an order of magnitude increase or a paradigm shift in how business is done. But one interesting aspect of security tokens that I think is worth paying attention to is this ability to take an enterprise or a piece of real estate or a piece of fine art, some sort of value, and you can tokenize that value. And then just like that token can enter a liquid market that runs 24/7, 365 and can't be stopped or censored, well, now you can have that applied to, let's say that you own, you know, a cannabis startup and it's valued at $5 million. And it's certainly not something that you're going to IPO on, and maybe bigger banks don't want to work with you to handle that sort of thing. Well, now you have the opportunity to essentially tokenize bits of equity in that small company that otherwise wouldn't be worthwhile to, you know, create a stock for. Well, now you can sell that to investors worldwide. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of regulations dependent on, you know, how that security is structured and whether secondary trading markets are even available. But just this idea that you can take illiquid value, whether it's in, you know, a small apartment complex or an expensive painting or a wine collection or, you know, say a cannabis grow house, and you can have investors be a part of that enterprise much faster, cheaper, and easier, and certainly long before a company would have to get to a certain point before it would be able to do something like that. So I see it as helping to provide the financial infrastructure needed for the cannabis industry to expand, helping to promote visibility and transparency in terms of product quality and logistical difficulties, and then finally providing an easier path towards capitalization, towards investment, and an easier way for younger, smaller startups to grow with investors who might not be, you know, geographically centered near that area, or who may otherwise, you know, not be able to access that investment because it's not, you know, big enough or run through the proper channels. So again, probably not something we're going to see for at least another, gosh, I would say, you know, 6 months, but absolutely something to pay attention to. Because once it starts taking place, it's going to take place bigger and faster than anybody anticipates.
So Jonathan, I'd like to talk to you about the fundamental growth that's happening right now, the fundamental investment. Now, obviously, a lot of the speculators have left. I mean, you and I met at a cryptocurrency meetup here in Austin, and we were talking about how much it was thriving in 2017, you know, mm-hmm. And you were saying that it's now virtually dead. So a lot of the speculation is gone, but we have to remember that the build-out was exactly why we even had a 2013 bull market, why we had a 2017 bull market. It was the build-out that happened in 2015 into 2016, which really took this bull market into high gear. So having said that, where is the build-out right now? And I'd like to close out this conversation on this topic.
Yeah, no, it's a phenomenal question. And it's, again, something that we've been watching all year. As the markets are slow, we're taking our time to plan our next moves and to figure out where our investments ought to be. And like we were talking about just earlier, you know, what do we think this next cycle is going to look like? Well, and the way to think about all of this really is in terms of a cycle or in terms of a pendulum that swings from undervalued to overvalued and never stops right there in the middle at exactly proper value. Then, like you said, every time we see one of these crazy blow off top speculative rallies, yeah, there are people who buy in at the very end thinking that they're going to get rich quick or overnight and then get burnt shortly after. But, you know, for every person like that, there are far more people, I think, that are intrigued simply by, you know, seeing a video like this or reading about it in the news or, you know, going to a meetup like we met. And they start looking into these things. And so I think that, yeah, it can be frustrating that you have this series of, you know, speculative cycles where it is possible for folks to lose money very quickly. But the attention that it grabs is what helps to then build value for the long run. So that, like you said, in 2014, end of 2013, early 2014, when Bitcoin shot from, you know, about 100 to 1100, well, then it entered a two-year bear market and people had to watch, you know, a 90% drawdown or so. Well, it's not like we were all sitting around doing nothing, waiting for new people to buy Bitcoin. They were, you know, figuring out how to implement segregated witness, and they were working on all these different scaling abilities. Companies like Coinbase were building out their infrastructure. You had new wallets being developed. There were user interface improvements. There were all these different things that were going on behind the scenes, so that by the time 2016 and 2017 rolls around, you know, we didn't have the one exchange, Mt. Gox, that we had, you know, back in 2013. We had dozens of different exchanges. And, you know, we didn't just have one or two wallets to choose from. We had a bunch of different wallets, and we had all these resources available to us. And I think the exact same thing has happened in 2018. I've been focused on what's going to happen when financial capital, when, you know, the pensions and the endowments and the hedge funds and the like move into this space. But, you know, even if you're not focused on that, just on the technology side, you know, Bitcoin has its Lightning Network up and running, and we're figuring out how we're going to scale from, you know, the 5 or 10 transactions a second that are happening right now to tens of thousands per second. Ethereum is working on its scaling roadmap, and there are already things like Plasma in place, state channels that are enabling developers to start building apps on top of that. We've seen dApps like Augur, the prediction market, go live, and, you know, there aren't many people using it right now. We still do have a lot of work to do, but we are orders of magnitude bigger and stronger and fundamentally more sound than we were, you know, even 6 months ago. And so I encourage people, you know, don't take your crypto advice from the mainstream media, from what you see on CNBC. I think somebody actually made a bot that basically did the opposite of whatever CNBC said, and it outperformed the market like 95% of the time. Like, it's gonna, if CNBC keeps that up, they're just going to put me out of a job. But, you know, you see somebody just put out this ridiculous headline. I think it was yesterday, like, you know, Bitcoin market, you know, on the verge of implosion. And if you don't go out there and do your own research, then I don't think you're going to understand what's actually going on in the space. So, you know, I always am happy to do these podcasts with you so that we can help inform people of what's actually going on. Very happy to send that to everybody. I encourage folks to get out there and, you know, hop on Twitter, dig into all the Medium articles that are being shared, look at the information that's being put out by folks like yourself or, you know, a lot of the other guys that are involved in the markets that are actually commenting on what's happening. Don't pay attention to the, oh my God, Bitcoin's up 5%. Oh, it's down 3%. You know, slow down, zoom out, look at the big picture. And I think when you do that, you'll find that, you know, not only is now from a technical aspect, from a chart aspect, the perfect time, not necessarily to go all in right now, but to start paying real attention. But it's definitely the best time to get involved, even if you're not an investor, you know, even if you're not interested in trading, there's a million different opportunities for programmers and for developers, for marketers, for people who want to find a project that they think is going to make the world a better place and to get involved. You don't have to be, you know, a software engineer in order to be able to do that. And you certainly don't have to just buy some tokens and then sit on them and hope the price goes up in order to make money in this space, to deliver value in this space, and to benefit from the amazing things that are happening. So, but thank you again for, you know, the opportunity to share this with the world. And I do encourage folks to reach out to you and me to ask questions, to try to get more involved, because, you know, what you see in the mainstream media or, you know, in the headlines for the price activity, you know, that's the tiniest tip of the biggest iceberg that folks have no idea is floating right underneath them.
Jonathan, if people want to learn more about Numeris and ways that they can invest in your hedge fund and be part of the crypto markets, especially in this very timely time, how can they do that? And just please share some information on that.
I appreciate that. So our website is numeris.capital, no.com, just numeris.capital. And for those who aren't familiar with us, we are structured like an investment fund, but basically we exist for the people in this space that are very interested in the fundamental changes that the crypto markets, you know, Bitcoin and everything else are going to bring to society, for folks that want to expose part of their portfolio to crypto, but either don't have the technical abilities to handle all the very difficult, you know, sort of, you almost have to be a computer programmer to do a lot of this, to not handle those aspects themselves, or if they simply don't have the time or energy to pay attention to a 24/7, 365 market that has insane volatility. Well, we're here to help them out with that. They can simply, you know, write a check and then have somebody else do all the work. And it's been honestly phenomenal for the people who this time last year were finding us and saying, well, I was either going to buy Bitcoin at 18,000 or I was going to have somebody else do it. And it would have been rough if they had gone with just putting it all into Bitcoin. And I've been happy to be able to manage investments for people who really love what's happening with Bitcoin and with everything else, but just don't have the time. So we're not an open fund. We are very selective in who we take on as investors, but please go to our website, check out what we're doing, and feel free to, we have a contact form there that will send me an email if you'd like to learn more. So again, thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to everybody that is paying attention to the good stuff that Crush the Street is doing. And I'm happy to be here as always.
Thanks, Jonathan, for coming on Crush the Street.